Oh, hi. Before we start the show, I have an announcement to make. If you own a green Ford Focus, license plate number 627XWT, your lights are on. If you are a fairly chubby man, and you're about 5'4", your fly is open. And if you...
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
And if you own...
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. There we go. Good, whatever, good novin. My name is Joe Smyknuckles, and welcome to the Joe Smyknuckles Show. How you doing? Good to be with you on this fine, beautiful, I don't know what it is, day outside. What a wonderful time to be alive, as opposed to what a horrible time it is to be dead. I'm telling you, baby. How are you, seriously? Man. What a day. What a day this is going to be. You know, when you wake up in the morning, you stretch a little bit, you put your feet on the floor for the first time after lying in bed all night, and you say to yourself, I'm going to make this day the best day I've ever had. And it never works out. If you stretch and you get out of bed and you put your feet on the floor and you say to yourself, this day's going to suck like no day's ever sucked before in the suck day history of day sucking, and you get through the day, at the end of the day, if you recall that conversation you had with yourself as you were getting out of bed, you will always be happy by saying, and here I thought it was going to be a sucky day, and look, it turned out to be mildly okay. So therefore, this is a successful day. And that's the way people should really approach their lives. I am a no good, low life little son of a bitch. And then toward the end of your life, you say to yourself, hey, you know what? I wasn't such a bad low life son of a bitch after all. As a matter of fact, it wasn't such a bad ride. And then you feel good about yourself because your expectations have changed. That's the way a lot of people live their lives. And all these public speakers and these motivational speakers, they say, get up and make every day the best day of your life. And then you get to the end of the day and you say to yourself, that didn't work out. That was horrible. It was horrible. It's nice to be surprised by good things happening that you didn't expect. And all these people say, you know, make your life wonderful. Don't do that, because if you do, you're just going to disappoint yourself most of the time. We all know that's true, don't we? It's nice to be surprised by good things. If you expect good things, you know, if you expect good things, then good things will come to you. What if they don't? Then you're sad and forlorn. I expected everything to be good, and now it sucks. That's not the attitude you want. You want to start sucking. You want to end up happy. That's pleasant. That's when you raise a glass and you say, this was a good day because I didn't expect this because I don't deserve anything. I'm telling you. Yes. What's that game called? The Limbo? Is it Limbo or something? Where you take a pole and you ask people. No, you take a pole and you have two people and they hold the pole. And the pole gets lower and lower. And this usually is done at weddings. Or at little dance stupid parties. And you try to get under the pole without falling down and touching your ass to the floor and looking like a complete schmuck. And that's what you do. You keep lowering the bar. And that's what you have to do in life. Keep lowering the start low, you know? Keep lowering that bar. And if you raise the bar, you'll never reach those goals. Ever. Maybe you will, but if you do, it's a damn miracle, isn't it? Start low and stay low. That's what I say. It's better to be a big, it's better to be a big fish in a small pond than a small fish in a big pond, or a middle-sized fish in a lake full of piranha. Or a bovine cow stuck in a cesspool. Or a cheese sandwich with no bread. Or a guppy. This could go on forever, but it's not going to. Hey, I got a question for you. I got a very serious question for you. And this is a question that I wanted to ask you for quite some time.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
You know, the smaller the town, the cheesier the weather forecast guy on television. Sometimes it's a weather forecast girl. By the way, if you're a weather forecast girl, you're expected to wear very short skirts and revealing boobage. If you're a weather forecast guy, we don't really care what you're dressed in. I mean, it doesn't really matter. All you're going to do is tell us the weather anyway. You're going to stand in front of that screen and you're going to just say, like, here comes a cold front, here comes a warm front, and we're going to listen to the weather. But if you're a woman weather person, a woman meteorologist, we're definitely looking at your, you know, at your composition. Yeah, whatever the weather is like incidental. Like, you know, it's going to rain today. Well, that's nice, but show me your boobs. I mean, that's the way we view females, except for Hillary Clinton. Nah, we don't go there. We really don't. We don't go there. If she's not wearing a pantsuit, we figure, oh, this is like a revelation in the clothing market. Hillary Clinton is not a woman. She's running for president, as you probably know, in case you've been on vacation somewhere. She's running for president. She'll be probably the presidential nominee on the Democratic side, and she could win the thing. I really don't know. It depends on. It's really the Republicans' game to lose. And I hate to talk politics because I'm so sick of it. I did it like for decades, and I had to do it, and I hated it, and I hated it, and I hated it. So I don't want to do it anymore. But anyway, Hillary Clinton, you never look at a politician and say, ooh, I wish I could see more of their boobs. You never do that. The only one that really did was that Alaskan King Crab lady, Sarah Palin. But her personality sucked so much that even the fact that she was mildly attractive for a politician, you just really didn't care because it was that bad, to the point where if she were totally naked and said, okay, let's jump on the bed and go at it, honey bear, you'd probably say, you're politically like just so fucked up, I can't even do this with you. That's how bad she was. And then she'd get up, you know. Anyway, I don't want to get into that. Anyway, on the weather forecasts, some of the weather people and some of the weather guys, the meteorologists, it gets a little awkward sometimes. They have a cute little segment like what to wear to the bus stop. And this is for the kids, not for the perverts. And they tell the kids, today you're going to wear your yellow raincoat and your galoshes and you're going to wear a head covering today, and you're going to carry an umbrella. And then, you know, then it starts to get a little bit freaky. And you're going to be revealing parts of your body below your waistline. And you're going to wear a slinky little outfit. Boys, you're going to wear pants that are going to accentuate all of the body parts that you don't really have developed yet. Girls, it's going to be hot outside. Don't wear anything at all. Stand there naked. It gets very, very freaky. It gets freaky. Okay, now I can't talk. You know what that means. That segment's shot. Forget it.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing?
It's just
what
disgusting.
Are you wearing today?
It's just disgusting.
What are you wearing? What are
it's
you
disgusting.
Wearing? What are you wearing today?
Just disgusting. I think that's the only reason that someone would become a meteorologist is to be able to tell what kids should wear to the bus stop. That's all. It's the only reason. They want power over that. That's all. Hey, kids, it's raining outside. Wear that tight little latex number. You know what I'm saying? The one you don't want your parents to see that you wear when you're Skyping. Do you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying to you?
You're listening to Ron Van Dam on Metro South Podcasting. Oi, he's such a mensch. I mean, a nice mensch, don't get me wrong, but still, really, a mensch.
There's a local supermarket near where I live, called, sounds like I'm drunk, doesn't it? You may not be too far off of that comment. There's a supermarket named Roach Brothers. Yeah, it's an actual supermarket, and I believe it is probably owned by a couple of brothers whose last name is probably Roach, R-O-C-H-E, I'm assuming. Here's what I'm saying. If your last name is Roach and you're running a supermarket, it may not be a great idea to put your last name in the name of the supermarket. Because when I think of Roach, I think of two things. The lesser thing that I think of is that little part of the marijuana cigarette that's left over and that you pass around, and as you're passing it around, you make believe you dropped it by mistake and you go, ooh. And that to me is one definition of Roach. The other definition of Roach, which is more prominent in my life, is this fucking little beetle bug that apparently survives a nuclear holocaust. That's what they say. Cockroaches apparently will outlive us and will eat our eye sockets out. And if there is some type of a nuclear explosion on your face, the cockroach, for some reason, would not be affected by that whatsoever. I tend to wonder if that's true, or if it means that the cockroach might be one of the more resilient things living as opposed to you. I don't know. Or maybe the first thing that comes back to life after all the radiation and fallout has subsided might be the cockroach, but not the human race. Maybe that's the case. Cockroaches are disgusting little bugs that exist when you turn the lights out. And then you turn them on and you realize there's a lot of cockroaches in the world and only one of me. The only place that people might outnumber cockroaches is India. Other than that, or China, maybe China. Other than that, cockroaches, a lot more of them. So here's the deal. Every time I walk into that store, in my mind, I'm picturing a cockroach in a paper bag, and I'm going to bring it home and infest my entire neighborhood with your roaches. So anyway, so I went shopping in Roach Brothers because I do that. And when you walk in, it's a beautiful store, and you get your groceries and your roach things, and you go to the checkout lane. There's a gigantic thing on the wall. And I've talked about this before. What haven't I talked about before? And it has all the department managers with a gigantic picture of them and underneath their title for that department. And you've got the deli department. And there's a deli manager from New Delhi. That'd be funny. And then you've got the produce manager, which I always thought was the produce manager. For some reason, when you're funding a television show or an event, you're a producer. But if you're putting out vegetables and displaying tomatoes, you're a producer. It's a produce. You're the produce manager. Okay. Whatever. And then, for some reason, the smallest part of the supermarket is this one counter that has all these cheeses. I didn't say Jesus. It has all these cheeses. C-H-E-E-S-E. Which I didn't get right for a long time when I was a kid. I thought that you were the Second Coming was going to be a gigantic piece of Gouda. Kind of still think it is. Anyway, ooh, Ron, alienate. Ready, alienate people? Ready and now. Apparently, there is this guy who is in charge of this counter that has all the different cheeses in it. Cheeses. That's what he says. Bob, can you rearrange your counter and put the Swiss cheese on the left and the Parmesan on the right and the Gouda somewhere in the middle and the Fontana cheese toward the bottom? Can you do that for me today, Bob? Cheeses. Cheeses. Yes, can you rearrange the cheeses for us? So I guess this is his job, and it must be odd at a cocktail party or something. What do you do? Oh, I am a doctor. I'm an ophthalmologist, and I optimize the eyes. I'm an ophthalmologist. And what do you do, Bob? Oh, I'm the cheese manager. Excuse me? I'm the cheese manager. I manage cheese. I tell cheese where to go. I rearrange cheese. I make sure there's plenty of cheese for everybody at all times. God forbid there'd be a shortage of cheese in my department. I make sure that when there's a shopper in the Roach Brothers world that there is cheese properly displayed for all. It's a very difficult job. Everybody knows you never, ever put the Gorgonzola near the Fontana. You never, ever do. That would be... Time would stop. Time would basically stop. Jesus, you don't do that. Not with cheeses. And sometimes in life, if I can't make a decision, I say to myself, well, what would cheeses do? They'd probably ferment. Ferment, I guess. I will ferment at this time. Yes, but I'm a cheese expert. I know my cheeses. I went to school for this. I went to the Columbia School of Cheeses, and we learned about the cheeses, about the proper storage of cheese, how to slice cheese properly without over-slicing your cheese, the proper handling of the cheese. Did you know that Swiss cheese, you don't pick up a Swiss cheese by sticking your finger in one of the holes? You actually grab the entire wedge of cheese, and that's how you move it from one place to the other. Cheese should be served at room temperature, except for Saturdays. And did you also know that some cheeses can actually be used as doorstops? The older cheeses can. Did you know that there are different cheeses for different wines? A red wine, you want a cheese that is somewhat sharper, a little more intelligent than the other cheeses. Soft cheese should be refrigerated at all times. When a cheese starts turning, you have to turn the cheese back again. Did you know that blue cheese looks like it's always moldy? And if it is, you'll never know it. You can't tell by the taste nor by the appearance. Blue cheese is what we call our more difficult cheese. It becomes very unruly, and it's not good to have a lot of cheese. It'll bind you up. Did you know that it'll actually affect your digestive system? And it will bind you up, and your turds will be very hard and difficult to pass. That's what we call the curse of cheeses, or the shroud of cheeses. And that's what I do for a living. I am a cheese manager. I eat, drink, sleep, and defecate cheese. That's all I do. Nobody knows more about cheeses than I do, except for the priest in the church down the street. He's into cheeses as well, but not the same kind of cheeses as what I'm into.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too, but sometimes he says bad words.
As there is a different cheese for different types of wine, there is also a different cheese for different types of crackers. If you have a darker colored cracker with a little bit more of a snap, the softer cheeses would go better with those. The crunchier cheeses would take the crunchier crackers. I'm so sorry. I should be killed. I just said the wrong thing in my business. The snappier crackers would take the softer cheeses. I could go on and on.
In a way, the sun has shone on me, makes it easy to make it hard. Take an inch, take a yard, take it all.
Here's something nice. Bob, who is the cheese manager at Roach Brothers, actually is engaged to Cynthia, who is the salad bar manager. What happened was she was actually putting a salad bar together, and she was looking for the shredded yellow cheese to put on the salad bar, and she couldn't find it, so she called up Bob. in the cheese department, and she said, we're out of the yellow shredded cheese.
Don't you know there's a stronger thing keeping us together? Don't you know there's a song to sing?
Bob said, okay, I've got some yellow shredded cheese. I'll get that going, and I'll bring it over to you at the salad bar, Cynthia. But I'm in the middle right now slicing some Gouda, so... cut me some slack, will you, please? And she said, sure. Wow, what an attitude. And Bob walked over with this vat of shredded yellow orange cheese. And Bob said, it's not shredded yellow orange cheese, man. This is like a sharp cheddar. And they looked into each other's eyes and fell in love immediately. And now they're going to get married in the winter, and I've been invited. I'm taking the deli manager. She's hot. Her name is Olive. Olive Loaf. Wonderful girl. Bob wasn't always the cheese manager. You know, you have to work your way up to that. You don't just walk in off the street and become cheese manager. Cheeses, no. He started by collecting the shopping carts in the parking lot. Did an impressive job, too. When's the last time you went to your OBGYN, your Obi-Wan Kenobi, your OBGYN Kenobi-O? I don't see my OBGYN anymore because I can't remember all her letters. I'm dyslexic, and I see my OGYBN, my homegirl. Actually, I'm not a woman, so I don't have an OBGYN. I have a regular DOCTOR who takes his FINGER and sticks it up my ASS. As long as we're going to talk in letters. Well, Dr. Levkoff and Dr. Brightman are joining us. They are two OBGYNs. That would be an OOBBGGYYNN. And, these uterus doctors are going to talk about how women don't seem to share information about their kangaroo pouch, about their chasm of fun, about their black hole of science, about their package delivery system. They don't talk about that with their doctors. They don't talk about their skin tight deficit, about their philodendrons, and they should. Just as men don't talk about their happy snakes or their All right, that's enough. Let's talk to doctors. They're not going to talk to me now. What? Who am I kidding? They're not going to talk to me. They're not going to talk to me. All right, where are they? Dr. Logan Lefkoff is a relationship expert, and Rebecca Brightman is an OBGYN women's health expert. They join us now to talk about, actually, to talk about talking about women's issues, which apparently is not as prevalent as one thinks. Is there a situation where women are not as talkative and upfront about their sexual questions?
A recent study was done by Merck of over 2,000 women between the ages of 18 to 40. And this really recent news tells us that there seems to be a communication gap when it comes to women talking to their physicians as well as talking to their partners about their sexual and reproductive health needs. Mm-hmm. Less than one out of every 10 women make the first move when it comes to their relationships. So it's a pretty staggering number.
I'd like to think as a physician in practice that women are very comfortable asking whatever questions that are on their mind. Mm-hmm. What this study indicated is that about 29% of women actually rely on their doctors to initiate these conversations, which is somewhat upsetting. I'd like to think that women are prepared and that when they leave their visits that they've had all their questions answered.
Yes, sex is still embarrassing, isn't it? We don't talk about, we do it, but we don't interact verbally with our partners as to tell them what we want, what we need, what concerns we have, and we don't communicate either with our doctors as to concerns about what's going on.
Communication about sex is definitely challenging. And the first thing that's important for all of us, but women in particular, to realize is that they're entitled to have these conversations with their partners, with their physicians. In this survey, one-third of women rarely or never talk to their partners about sexual health. I mean, think about what's missing from your relationship if you're not talking about your sexual or reproductive health. There's a huge gap there. And we have an opportunity to inspire better conversations, which in turn leads to better health and better relationships.
Yeah.
So what's also interesting is 31% of women, it was found, really don't even think about their sexual health most of the time. And even in the context of an appointment with a doctor, about 24% of women really find these conversations to be actually awkward, which they are, but these, you know, it's a perfect time to really address concerns when you're in the midst of these office appointments.
Yeah. And you know, I know we're talking about females, but you know that males are even worse. They are.
That is certainly the stereotype, and that would be an entire conversation, one separate from this. But this idea that we really want women, for this particular discussion, the real talk is really important, because women can be role models for the men in their life about communication and speaking to doctors. So hopefully if we get women to do it better, it will inspire men to do it even better.
Well, that's
and
true.
And it's important. These are awkward discussions to have, but they're really, really important discussions. And they can only make one closer with their partner and also with their physician.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if partners communicated their sexual desires to each other and needs, and then that partner was able to satisfy them? What a wonderful world that would be.
Yes, it would. And it's interesting because when we talk about sexual health, we're not just talking about pleasure and needs.
Right.
We're talking about emotional needs.
Yes.
We're talking about reproductive health. In this survey, 55% of women rarely or never talk to their significant other about birth control options. there's a fundamental problem here. It's really hard to have your needs and wants satisfied, and also just your expectations about a relationship if these are things we're not talking about.
Wow. So on the other end of it, medically, if a woman has a problem or a concern, I assume that she's very upfront with her OBGYN.
I would like to think so, but unfortunately, the study found that 29% of women actually rely on their doctors to initiate conversations about sexual health and contraception. 24% of women actually feel uncomfortable having these discussions, but it's really, really important. And I think a woman should look at her physician as a partner so that the two of, you know, I can make a decision with my patient to figure out what's really the most logical option for this woman. What are her career plans? What are her plans in terms of starting a family? Because that will really dictate what is the best option for her in terms of family planning.
Huh. So a woman can actually have a physical problem or concern and not even bring it up to her doctor unless he or she brings it up?
Well, some women don't, and that's the concerning part, and that's what this study found in over 2,000 women. 29% of women won't even bring up something that concerns them unless they're asked specifically. So it's really tough. And I think if women are aware of the statistic and really, you know, they may see comfort in the fact that they're not alone, but perhaps they'll be better prepared when they come in for their office appointments.
Wow. See, I think you should have a license to have sex, or at least to have a baby. I do. I think a lot of people have children, and then they can't support them, and I think that's abusive, and I think they need a license. Anyway, that's kind of stupid, isn't it? But I'm mad about that, that people don't think twice about their actions and the ramifications of what they do. And there is birth control, and why people ignore that just for their own pleasures kind of makes me mad, to be honest with you.
Well, people's choices can certainly be frustrating, but I think the idea behind ruling the real talk is getting people to be empowered by their sexuality and their reproductive health, and to start having some really good conversations so that everyone is better in the end.
Absolutely.
Right, and don't be embarrassed to have these discussions, and talk to your doctor.
Absolutely. No, I mean, it's good. Sex is good. As a matter of fact, they keep telling me, go to the gym, and I say, hey, I got the best exercise at home if people just cooperate with me. All right. How do we get more information?
Well, I would suggest if women have specific questions about family planning and different contraception options that they go to their physician first and foremost, but also the ACOG website, the website for the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, contains all sorts of information that can women can easily access and have their questions answered.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's both a psychological and a physical health situation, so it is important. I'm glad that you're talking about this, and there are places to go to support that. Pleasure speaking to the both of you today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Yeah. I think I just embarrassed myself with those two ladies. I think I did that successfully. Now, sex is probably the best physical exercise you can get. But you have to ask your partner to spot you, so to speak, I guess. I understand totally how it's difficult for women to talk about sex. They'll talk about it to each other, but not to their doctors. Certainly not to their husbands or boyfriends. You should know what I'm feeling. If you really love me, if you really are connected to me, you would know what I'm feeling. Oh, okay. But I don't. But you would. You should know. But I don't. But you should. But I don't. If you really knew me that well, you would know. Not unless you tell me. If you hide it from me, I can't tell what you're hiding. Well, you should know what I'm hiding. That's your job. To should know things. Being my husband is knowing what I don't tell you. You should be able to tell. You should be able to look in my eyes and tell me what I'm thinking. But you can't look in my eyes and tell me what I'm thinking. Well, that's not my job. That's your job. Oh, okay, fine. Okay, didn't know that. Kind of did, but didn't know. And women are like that with their doctors, too, I suppose. With their OBGYNs. So tell me, Mrs. Hargrave, how are you doing with your uterus? Do you have any uterus problems?
Well, you should know. You're my doctor. I shouldn't have to tell you. You should know.
All right. Wow. That's heavy.
You should know it's heavy. You're my doctor. You should know. You knew it was heavy. You should know everything else without me telling you. Why do I have to tell you everything? You should know.
Okay, fine. Okay, fine. Whatever. 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 I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Do you know that there is one item that can not only increase your home's beauty, but its value? That would be placemats. Hello, I'm George Karanapikopoulos, owner of George K's Wholesale Placemat Warehouse, your one stop for all your placemat needs. We have a placemat for every room of your house. That's right, placemats are not just for the dining room anymore. Anywhere you might make a spill, or maybe where you eat, like in front of the TV. I do it all the time like you. You want a placemat. We have fancy placemats, like in bamboo or teak. That's right, teak. Nice plastic laminate ones for no stains, even blue. We can custom make you placemats in as little as 2 weeks. Come to our showroom at the intersection of Route 27 and the Holbrook Turnpike. You're going to like what you see. Your placemat is waiting for you at George K's Wholesale Placemat Warehouse.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're coming to the end of another road trip of love. And it's always important at the end of these little programs that I do. By the way, in case you're not familiar, I'm here every weekday in your audio device. And you can visit me anytime you want by going to all these different internet places. The super highway of love and affection. You can go to TuneIn Radio. You can go to Podbean. You can go to ronvandam.com. You can go to metrosouthpodcasting.com. You can go to newenglandbroadcasting.com. You can go to hell. You can do all those things. And if you say, oh, wow, Ron's been doing this like on the internet for over a year, I didn't know. I wish I could hear his show from like 6 months ago. I heard that was a good show. Well, it's all there, man. You can sit on your computer and listen to me talk for like days and days and days when you put it all together. By the way, don't do that. Don't ever listen to me talk that long. You will drive yourself crazy. I have driven myself crazy simply by my own existence. Actually, that's not true. I said that for theatrical purposes. I don't talk to my doctor either. My doctor says, how is everything with you? And I go, oh, fine, oh, fine. But you're supposed to, like, run down a list of things. Oh, my back hurts a little bit when I get up in the morning, and I had a nosebleed for, like, 10 minutes last Wednesday, and I'm sneezing every once in a while. Here's a chart of all the times that I've sneezed within the past 7 months. I wrote them all down, and I had diarrhea. I had like the loose shits like the day before yesterday because I had a hot dog and I don't know if I cooked it entirely, although I thought they were cooked to begin with. And I had an eyelash. I think it was on October 27th. I had an eyelash go into my eye and I thought that was a certain death, but it didn't happen. It wasn't so bad. And had an ingrown toenail. Oh, my God. I could go into that story, but I don't think we have time. Sorry, doctor. What did you ask me? But see, so you don't do that. So you talk about how you feel at the time of the examination. Well, how are you feeling, Ron? Fine. And you kind of just want to get out of there. You don't want to go through all that stuff with the doc, because then the doctor's going to, like, prescribe something. I already take, like, 75 different pills every day. I think the only thing I want my doctor to do is tell me if I have cancer and then treat it and you know, let me live longer. I mean, other than that, I pretty much get the idea. I've been alive long enough to know that certain things, like even if they bother me, I know what my doctor is going to say each and every time. The doctor is going to say, oh, that's because you're getting old. My arm fell off. My arm fell off in a boating accident. It was there was another boat coming by. I was on a boat. I was wearing my white pants, and another boat came by, and my arm got caught between the two boats and severed my arm. And I have no arm, as you can see. Oh, that's well, you're getting old. So you know that's what happens. Arms fall off when you get old. That's what arms do. So I wouldn't be concerned about it. We can put a fake one on there for you if you like, but you're getting old. You're just getting old. There's no place. There's no point in sewing that thing back on again. You got another arm, don't you? So let's not go wacky with the arm replacements. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to do that. You don't want to go wacky with the arm replacements. So doctor, and I can hardly walk. My hips are like all displaced. I don't know where I put them, And I can't even walk. I have a wheelchair now. As you see, I'm sitting in a wheelchair. That's because my hips don't work. I can't move. Well, that's because you're getting old. And when you get old, the hips stop working. And you know what I'm saying? You watch a lot of TV anyway. Why do you have to walk around watching TV? And if you want some exercise, you just move that wheelchair a little bit. You know what I'm saying? But you're getting old. That's the reason for that. You're just getting old, and that's what's happening with you. You're getting old. Yeah. And I have this kidney stone that hurts like hell, man. And it's just, oh my God, it's like passing a baby. I've never had one, but I'm assuming it's like passing a baby. It's a sharp kidney stone. It's like it got rough edges or something. Can I get an operation to have that kidney stone removed or pass that stone somehow? Yeah, you know what? You're just getting old, and when you get old, your everything calcifies, and you got rocks in there by now. You know, you're getting old. That's all that is. You're getting old. That's the best explanation. You're getting old. You're just getting old. I don't have any pills for that, so. I have a pill for everything else, but you're getting old. There's really nothing to do here. She's getting old. That's what my doctor says. You know, she's getting old. That's all. Actually, she does, and I made that up as a comedy bit. And I apologize to my doctor, whoever you are. I don't mention your name because that would be totally embarrassing and also probably legally not a good idea on my part. So I made up a story about my doctor saying every year that you're getting old no matter what I do. Actually, when I was a little kid, my mother used to take me to the doctor when I had a sore throat. I'd be like 8 years old or something. And actually, I didn't have to go to the doctor. Doctor would come to my house. They made house calls when I was 8 years old. That's how old I am. Yeah, they used to get on the little carriage and take the horse over to my house. And the doctor would be lying in bed, 8 years old, and wasn't going to school because I had a sore throat. And my mother was all upset, thinking it was strep throat or cockadoodle or something. And the doctor would look at my throat and say, "Yeah, that throat is pretty sore. It is pretty red, and it could be the tonsils. I'm thinking it could be the tonsils someday. But you know what? Your little boy's getting old. He's going to be 9 years old in about 2 months. He's going to be nine, and I don't know. You know, he's getting old, and that's just that's what it is. You know." So yeah, he's got a sore throat, and you got to expect that because he's getting old. That's what happens. Well, thank you for taking the trip with me today. I'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace.